so let's call the meeting to order.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We're going to start off tonight with a presentation from Mr. Chuck Bastian. And what organization are you with? I apologize.
Bernard P. Donegan Incorporated.
Okay, great. And can you just tell us a little bit about what your firm does?
We do the municipal financing for school districts and municipalities all around New York State.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And we've got Pam sitting in the back, too, so we'll have her just say a couple of quick words about the project and where we're at before we get started with Chuck's presentation.
Right, and this is the first time we've been back in front of the whole group in this format since March, so we wanted to make sure we kind of hit some highlights. I do want to say that Garrett Hamblin really wanted to be here tonight, but unfortunately there was some unexpected events over the weekend with his mom, so he's had to be called not to double that line. So we handed out two different packages tonight. There was an 11 by 17 and then an 8 by 11. The 11 by 17 is a total listing of the project scope items with very detailed descriptions. With respect to brevity, we won't be going through that line item by line item. We have many times over, and in fact, our last buildings and grounds committee is where we finalize all of those specific items. So we want to focus a little bit on the 8.5 by 11. And if you flip over to that, the first page is the proposed project timeline. And as we've been working through this, one of the primary focuses of all's efforts is to try to address and get started with construction as soon as possible. And this timeline notes really based on the time it takes to design scopes and SED review that we're looking at the summer of 2020, which is why we find ourselves here tonight, which is the first star, looking for board action on potential community vote of December timeframe. It seems like there's a lot of time from now until then, but lots and lots. The second page is actually a slide that Jerry and really talked about that we would be working not only with the Buildings and Grounds Committees of the district and the building administrator teams to look at not only facility needs but educational program needs and try to package proposed projects together with associated scopes from an efficient, cost-effective approach. Some of those items we recommended really be addressed through the district's maintenance and operations budget, and some of those items to utilize the New York State Smart Schools Funding Initiative and program. And all of that wrapped up together becomes the district's long-range plan. And that's something that is a living and breathing document. As things change, conditions change, the district will be able to make modifications. But a lot of conversations, discussions, and discussions and research that has gone into this. So, with that, we're here tonight to talk about what are the proposed projects. The district has known for a while that its needs were many and very smartly created basically savings accounts for capital reserve, which we'll get into in a little bit. With that, it was a priority of the group to look at a project that had a neutral financial impact. So that is what we're identifying here as referencing Proposition 1, and that's in the $16.6 million range. Those items are really the highest priority items within the district. They are the past, the existing, or expected useful life of things. Some of these items are failing condition, where you potentially, if not addressed, really cause permanent structural damage. These scopes are mostly interrelated, so while you've got sort of four pages of detailed line items, they really can be summarized with the following. Basically, we're looking at both buildings, roofing replacements of original vintage roofs. Some areas have previously been replaced, those will be maintained. Fire alarm enhancements at both buildings, and that's not a total replacement of the system. That's just making sure that there's the, in all the student-occupied spaces, there's the appropriate visible notification units or shows, and making sure that those get tied into the head-end equipment. At this building, in the original portion, you'll note that this building is 1963. It's the oldest portion, the boilers, and a lot of the HVAC, that's the heating and ventilation equipment, is very, very old and way past its prime. So this project would replace those units in conjunction with the window replacements at all of the exterior class walls. This work done together allows for new HVAC equipment to take into account the increased energy efficiency of increased insulation of the roofs, as well as of the new windows that go in. So all of the systems will leave the district with a much more energy efficient system, building. There are other associated scopes of work with that. At the exterior walls, you have unit ventilators with attached shelving. Those will get replaced as well. High school science rooms, that work will happen, as well as replacing the existing outdated equipment with some additional safety equipment to support existing program needs. At the elementary school, we'd look to relocate the main office so that it's in a much more visible location. It has direct access to the exterior drop-off and drive loops, as well as create a more secured entry sequence so that wide open when students are being dropped off or arrive at the morning, but then we're able to tighten it down so that there's a secure spot for people to be able to show their appropriate IDs and gain access to the building. And then finally, be looking at, based on the safety issues and the needs of the track and bleachers, total reconstruction and replacement of those systems. The second project we refer to as Proposition 2, and that's would be additive in nature. There were other high priority items for the group's committee in regards to safety and educational program needs that they really felt needed to be part of the vote. So this would be if Proposition 1 passes and Proposition 2 passes, then it would be a total project. And that consists of, at both buildings, interior door replacements of the older vintage areas, classrooms and offices. This allows for not only efficient lockdown from inside the rooms, but increases handicap accessibility. It would be lever sets in lieu of existing knobs and smaller vision windows, as well as failing condition issues. Renovate an existing classroom here at the junior senior high school for an adaptive PE fitness weight room. Right now, that's something that kind of travels around and necessitates dragging equipment and mats in through hallways. So this would be a permanent location adjacent to the locker rooms, which has also the potential for opening up for community use. And then finally, at the elementary school, pool, a modification of the exterior circulation element, so tightening up the intersection of the parkers versus the drop-off folks versus the buses, and enhancing that drop-off area. Are there any questions?
Okay. Thank you, Pam. Here's a report I'm going to send around for all of us. It's 15 pages with 5 or 6 pages of appendices, so I'll try not to put anybody to sleep with what we have. We'll go through the financial pieces, and then Chris DiCarlo from our office will follow up with walking through again the timeline of some of the steps that we have for your consideration tonight if we are going to be voting in December, just as a refresher. So what this report really is, again, is how school districts went ahead and take building projects in New York State, how the building aid flows, and how bond market principal and interest supports here in the state, complying with all the regulations we have. So if you would, turn into page 3 up in the front of the report, and that'll go through, again, some of our assumptions that we have to set forth when we try to come up with what might the cost really be to me at the end of the day when you're talking these project sizes that Pam just went through with us. So first and foremost, our top variable there we have is called the building aid ratio, and you may have heard of this before, 78.2%. So out of our building projects that we do in New York State for our school district, the state should give us back 78.2% aid on that. It's almost like having a coupon when you go into the store, which that's a pretty good size coupon. So we want to make sure that gets maximized. So between Pam's office, our office, and the district office, as we're filing forms back and forth to the state, we want to maximize that building aid. That's a good number for us. Second item just below that is what we call bond percentage. So we've talked with Pam and Garrett in terms of that list of scope items that they've gone through with you. Out of all those items, which ones are 100% eligible for aid, which ones might get kicked out for building aid. So we wanted to get a figure from them in terms of the scope, and then we've backed off on that a little bit more on the bond percentage, just to leave a little cushion. So we've used 94.4% for Proposition 1, and if both propositions pass, we've used 94.1. Did I say that right? 94.4 and 94.1. So that's good. Again, we want to maximize that. The goal there is to have 100% if we can, but we want to maximize that bond percentage. And then after that, we have a list of dates here. So they're essentially a set of domino dates, depending on how the different approvals come through. So starting off with a voter referendum, if you consider that for December 11th, then we ask Pam and Garrett, when do you think you might submit to state ed? When do we think we'd get state ed approval? I know people have heard about how long it takes state ed to review plans and specs. So we've estimated March of 2020. And again, if that date slides either forwards or backwards, we'll slide the financing to match that as those needs come up. And then when would the project have the certificate of substantial completion? Maybe June of 2022. And then we file a final cost report, which is when the aid starts then flowing for us. So that's in our projections. And if we have our approval in the spring of 2020, we would most likely have to borrow on a note, a bond anticipation note, June of 20. 1 year later, June of 21, we'd have our first interest payment. And a year after that was when we'd have to start our first principal payment, so June of 2022. We've used a couple interest rates here for estimating our note rates at 4%, bond rates at 5%. Again, today, if we were going to issue a note, we're probably in the mid-2% range, 2.5%, so we've got a cushion built in there. And the bonds, we'd be in the mid-3% range now. So again, we've got a cushion there because we're not going to be bonding for a couple of years now. Down below, capital reserve, again, this is like your down payment, so that's fantastic that you saved up some dollars through the years in your savings account that Pam mentioned, $4.8 million. And that's, again, that's very good because that you can use toward your local share, and that downsizes the amount of bond that we have to that issue to cover the project. So that's excellent to have that. And I'll get into this a little bit further later on, but the assumed amortization for state aid, 4.5%. And just briefly, what does that mean? What the state does is they pick an assumed amortization interest rate that they're going to pay us our building aid based on, whether we bond above that or below that. Typically, let's say maybe a Westchester school district might be able to bond at that level or lower with a pretty good credit rating. A lot of us school districts upstate might be bonding at that or a little bit above it. So we've built in a cushion between what we would bond at, let's say 5%, what the state of the would rate would be 4.5%. So that's okay. We built a little pessimistic cushion in to work with. Okay, let me pause. Are there any questions on the first page of assumptions? Okay, we can come back to these too if any wants to dig into those a little bit more. The second page of assumptions, page 4, again, is really just a breakdown of how the accounting goes for the capital project expenses. So over on the right-hand side of the top box, if Proposition 1 is approved, that would be $16,592,000 that Pam mentioned. And how is that broken down between construction and incidental costs? That they're helping you manage $15.2 million. And to their number, we've added two more items called DASNY, capitalized interest. Let me explain a little bit about what those are. The DASNY amount that's listed there for a line item in our budget, that's if we want to issue our bonds through the Dorm Authority later on when we're getting ready to issue our bonds. We have two choices. We can essentially issue our bonds traditionally like you would with Wall Street, directly with Wall Street, and they buy our bonds and we're all set. Or we can issue our bonds through the Dorm Authority down in Albany. And why would we do that? Again, I mentioned earlier this 4.5% state assumed interest rate that they're paying us aid on versus the 5% that we might be bonding at. Let's say the bond market starts moving away from us, goes to 5.5% or 6%. Okay, now we're going to be a little bit off from that cushion that we built in. So what we're able to do with the Dorm Authority is if we instead issue our bonds with the Dorm Authority, they override that state assumed rate that everybody gets across the state, and they match it up to what the dorm bond gets issued at. So again, I'll just say, let's say the dorm issues the bond at 6%. Maybe that's what the bond market has moved up to. We override the 4.5% and we match it up to 6%. So it gets our aid much tighter, much better, closer back to where we are right now. So that's the reason why we would go through the Dorm Authority. And it's an optional thing. We don't have to, but if we would want to, we can. Because we'll have some dollars setting aside to do that if we want to. That's a big number. And we get building aid on that, which is good. But that's kind of an insurance policy for us from the financing side of the equation. It's kind of like contingency for financing. The second piece we have there is capitalized interest. And you'll see where that factors into the maturity schedule. In terms of the building aid does not start flowing for us until we file that final cost report. So that's essentially 18 months after state ed approval. So what do we do in the interim between when we first borrowed at the beginning, when you got state ed approval and you started your construction, versus when the building aid starts 18 months later? We have to pay the bank after that first year and a half. So we have some interest expenses built into the budget to help us pay the bank. Okay, so that's a long-winded story on how the right side of the equation is built up for a project budget. On the left side, again, how is that $16.5 million made up? $4.8 million is from the reserve. Again, that's your down payment. And then what would be left would be roughly an $11.7 million bond. Same thing down below. If we have Propositions 1 and 2 both pass, now we're at bottom right corner, $18.5 million for expenses. And on the left side, again, the reserve stays the same, but the bond goes up approximately $1.9 million, so we're at 18.5. So again, I'll pause. Anybody have a question?
Just one real quick. This capitalized interest expense, you're saying that once we start this project, we're going to have $1 million in interest in the first year, $979,000. I mean, that's what you project.
Yeah,
that'll
be over the first 18 months.
Okay.
With no building aid. So we don't have a revenue source that's 70% coming in yet.
Right.
So we have two choices. We can let that drop to the levy, or we can have the project cover it. So those are our two choices. So this is the way that we set this up for every school district project in the state. for us higher aid districts. Again, if you're a Westchester or a Long Island district, most likely you're factoring something right into your levy. So they don't usually capitalize the interest expense downstate, but we have to upstate because we do not want an impact like that to the levy. Any other questions on that page? Okay, you'll see that number in action in a few minutes. Okay, page 5, again, we just take a quick look historically at each of your 5 towns that the school district covers. You project those out on page 6 in terms of each of the towns' last 5-6 years' historical assessment changes, just to see if the assessments are going up, going down. Is there a trend in full value that's being shown here? So page 7, we take all of those into that left-hand column. And that's a good sign. It looks like your full value's been increasing and is projected to increase a little bit more into the future, which, again, helps offset tax rate each year, as you know. Okay, let's take a look at Proposition 1. Page 8 and 9 get into a little bit of the details of exactly how building aid is calculated. I don't want to put you to sleep with that, but if you want, go to page 10. So here's the maturity schedule for Proposition 1 only. So column B, there's our $4.8 million down payment. And then in column C, over the next 15 or 16 years or so, we're going to pay back the remaining $11.7 million in principal payments. Column E, we have our interest payments each year. And you add those two together. Column F, you get your debt service, the principal plus the interest. So that's right about $1.1 million per year would be our bond payment, principal and interest. In column G, there's our 15 years worth of building aid flowing. It's actually 14 years plus a half a year at the beginning and a half a year at the end. They pay building aid on half-year increments depending on the timing of the approvals. So we have 15 years worth of building aid, and that roughly equals the debt service each year. So that's why column J on the far right side is essentially zero. It's a little positive, a little negative each year. But you'll see at the top of column I, that's where we need those capitalized interest amounts to help cover that interest payment in the $470,000 the first year, and then half of the interest in that second year. Or most of the interest, but not the principal payment in that second year. So that's that total of $979,000 column I. But that's the mechanics of how the bond would be structured, laid out in terms of principal and interest. Any questions on that page, how that flows together? This is similar to how your existing debt would be working, too.
So just to clarify, Proposition 1, the 16.6 million dollar project is budget neutral by the end of the project. There's no additional cost to the taxpayers. That money with the down payment, as you termed it, that we have in the district now, plus the revenue that comes back in from the state building aid, we're able to do that entire project for zero cost, additional cost to the taxpayers. No impact on the levy.
Right, no levy impact, column J. Again, there's a few variables. Again, let's highlight some of the variables. Again, the interest rate in the top of column E. So that's a conservative interest rate. We've also, again, talked with Pam and Garrett about that bond percentage. That should be conservative, so we want that to be better in terms of generating more building aid for us. And the third item is we've projected zero interest earnings. You will make some interest earnings. You have to. That's an IRS rule. So you will make some interest earnings, whether it's $10,000 or $100,000 or $500,000, you will make some interest earnings. So whatever interest earnings you make, we have to use against the interest expense. So I've assumed zero. So whatever you do make, you can offset that further to try to drive that right-hand column J more into a negative range, make it turn out better. So good summary. Thank you, Patrick. Okay. I'm going to Proposition 1 and 2. So page 11 and 12, again, calculating a little bit more building aid, because, again, the project size is higher now. again going up by about $1.9 million. So page 13, you get the blue box, top left corner, Proposition 1 and 2, and in the title it says $18,500,510 capital project. So column B, again, it's the same reserve amount. Column C, now our bond is up a little bit to $13.6 million. So our debt service in column F is roughly $1,290,000 or so per year. And column G, the building aid goes up a bit, but to $1,238,000 or so. So now we end up with a little local share each year in the right-hand column of around $50,000 or $55,000 in terms of a local share. So what does that mean for us going forward? Page 14, we take that and divide it across that full value tax base that we had on one of the prior pages. And you can see it's around 10 or 11 cents per year. And then you can see what it would be on an assessed value basis in each of the towns to the right. So if it's about 10 cents or so per year, the last page, page 15, is what we call our house page. So we've boxed the middle row there. Let's say it's a $100,000 full value property someone has. So if you do not have a STAR exemption on the right-hand side, that's roughly $10 a year. But if you have a basic STAR exemption in the middle, then you'd be down to around $7 a year. And if you had a senior STAR exemption, you're down to around $3 a year. And again, we've shown the scale a little bit above and below that for you to do the calculations off of it. You have a different property.
So this has the same assumptions of that zero interest earned as well?
Right.
And bond rate?
Right.
So potentially it can be less.
Correct.
While he's not willing to go out on a limb and say that, the likelihood is very high that it will be significantly less because we're making a significant amount of money now in interest on our reserve accounts. So we'll be in good shape. So sum total, Chuck, we'd be looking at give or take on a $100,000 home with both Project 1 and Project 2 should both pass. Project 1 is zero net effect. Project 2 would cost a homeowner with STAR and a $100,000 home $7
right.
per year. Okay. Senior citizens, senior STAR is $3. No STAR down.
Right. the additional priority items that Pam was going through with you.
Right. What do you think, Gary?
That's good.
I went through a lot of concepts there kind of quickly, so did a lot of that sink in? Or is it, again, feel free to ask questions, good questions, dumb questions. No problem at all.
Just one real quick. The projected state state aid, is that generally pretty set in stone? I mean...
Yeah, if you want to, in the back you've got a pink piece of paper. Go right behind that.
So the state aid.
Okay, so the good bar chart here, blue and orange and burgundy colors. So what you see down in the bottom in the legend, there's three different colors there: blue, purple, and orange. So the blue one is a current aid ratio. So that's also what's called your RWADA. You also use with BOCES. Aid. So that's your current aid ratio, and it goes up or down a little bit each year. And you can see it's 53.6 last year, and this year it's coming up to 54.7. So that's good. You're getting a little bit more aid on like BOCES purchases. The second row down is selected. So the state lets us go back and select our highest building aid ratio all the way back to the 81-82 school year. So that's kind of nice. So it's kind of one of those, if people use the term hold harmless. So even though your current aid ratio could be going up or down a little bit, they're going to let you go back and select your highest one, which is kind of nice. And then build 4 is what the state technically calls projects now that we get state approval or voter approval this year. There's four different categories of building aid. There's, if you looked at your reports on the online, you can see build reports, build 10, build 3, and build 4. So everybody that's been voting projects since 2005-06, where the orange bars start, that's what we've been using as build 4. That's what applies to us now. So we're able to go back and select that highest aid ratio, subtract 10%, add 10%, and you still end up with a 78.2. So you can see you've been pretty consistent here for a while at that number. This is kind of like Bonds 101. It's like a college course.
On the debt that we discussed earlier, you said it was aidable. Is that aidable at the same percentage building aid that the rest of the project would be?
Yes. Okay. Yes. It's considered an incidental cost. So, again, building projects are generally broken down. Maybe about 75% of your total authorization is hard costs, construction costs, contractors doing hard construction dollar work. And then maybe the other 20-25% is what we call the incidental costs or the soft costs. So that would be architect, construction manager, furniture and equipment, surveys, finance, credit rating, legal, bond counsel, and DASNY fee would fall under there too. That's why we want to make sure we add that in there to have a placeholder of a certain line item specifically for it if we want it or if we don't. And again, what's happened since I think around 2001, when the state came out with this program, they allowed us to do our financings with the Dorm Authority. And that state assumed rate gets set each year by the state based on all the school districts in the state bonds that have been issued for building projects. So they take all 200 bonds or 150 bonds, whatever it is, average it out, and come up with that state assumed rate. And you probably recall that interest rates have slowly been dropping all through that time period. So a lot of times we have not had to go to the Dorm Authority. So the state assumed rate gets set, and probably 1 or 2 years later is by the time we bond, and it's at that or a little bit below it. So we say, hey, let's not go to the Dorm Authority, let's go bond on our own, keep those dollars or don't bond those dollars, and we're doing as good or better than if we had gone to the dorm. Now we're kind of in the other way with interest rates, as you've probably seen. State assumed rate is pretty low these days, and we're starting to tick up. So again, we don't know interest rates going forward too far. You don't either. So we need to build a cushion, a contingency, just like you would with construction dollars in terms of what happens if interest rates really run up. You don't want me to come with a projection here for you at 8%. That wouldn't make sense. That's a much different set of numbers here. So what happens for us is if we need to is we go to the Dorm Authority, they override that state assume and match it up to wherever the dorm is bonding at.
Does the spread between those two rates decide what you're going to pay for that?
No, the DASNY fee will be what it is,
okay,
based on the size of our bond.
Okay.
The spread either makes it an easy call for us, say we're definitely going this way, or not. Or if the spread's pretty close, then it might be a 50-50 kind of call. So just before we get ready to bond, and usually DASNY has a bond pool every June, so probably March or February, Chris and I will come and sit down with Jody and Pat and go through with the board if you want. Here's what the two current sets of numbers would look like if we went on our own, given today's bond market, at whatever our assumed rate was, versus if we go to the dorm and they override it to whatever we think the dorm's going to bond at, based on where the current market is in February or March of that year. And then, hey, maybe it's an easy answer. If this one's a lot better, we're going this way. If it's a pretty close answer, then now we'll go into the question a little bit deeper and a couple more variables we'll want to walk through with you on. But it's a nice analysis that we go through because, again, we got to get you the least cost financing, whichever way it goes.
Thank you.
Okay, so Chris has a timeline here. Let me hand this around. Just kind of review with you the steps. Try to go from here to there. Mm-hmm. So within the packet that Chuck is passing around right now are essentially dates or steps that are leading up to the voter referendum and a couple beyond. There's 33 steps contained in this packet, but we're just going to focus on five of them. If you want to flip over to page two, step number 13 is what we're doing this evening, and that's the meeting to review the draft of the tax rate impact report to determine the tax impact for the project. Also on that same page is step number 15. At this evening's board meeting, potentially calling for the special election, adopting the wording of the proposition, and that would be happening at some point this evening.
And your bond council, I think, sent you a copy of the resolution for consideration tonight, if you'd like.
And then on the next page, step number 18, that step is essentially leading up to the first publication date for the legal notice which calls for the special election. There's four publications that will need to happen, and those are must be done between 45 and 49 days. The first publication needs to be published leading up to the voter referendum. This next page forward, then, is step number 23, and that is the actual voter referendum on December 11th. And then also on that same page, step number 28, upon successful voter referendum, the board would need to adopt a bond resolution, and that bond resolution allows for the district to essentially issue bond anticipation notes or serial bonds for the capital project in order to finance it.
We didn't want to bore you to go through all the steps, so just highlighted a few of the key ones.
Any questions on those?
Thank you for that.
And what we'll do, in the interest of transparency on all of this, we'll post these documents to our website as well on the building project header. And we'll be working with Pam and Garrett on PR. Certainly we'll be giving multiple presentations here in reference to the project as we get closer and closer to the date of the election of the vote.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stay for the rest of the
Thank you.
Okay.
Good to see you.
We have another presentation from our elementary school principal, Mr. Trokic.
This one's not as much money. So I just wanted to review with you our ELA and our math state testing data trends and from last year to this year. Something I wanted to make sure I threw out there was they changed the test up this year compared to the past. It used to be we had 3 days of both. This year they were two. So really the data is going to be a little bit tough to compare to previous years, but we'll take this year's and compare them to next year. Something else that I want you to keep in mind is we started with, they say by 2020 we need to have straight computerized computer-based tests. So we figured if we started in third grade this year, next year, fourth, or this year we'll do fourth, third and fourth, and next year we'll do third, fourth, and fifth. So the building up there will be ready to go if that does in fact pass. They change their mind quite often. And something to keep in mind, with that computerized testing, it was pretty difficult for the kids to get used to for the first time. So certainly some bumps along the line there. We worked hard. We spent a lot of time. It's a whole different concept. And that's why we started with third grade, because they really didn't know any different. They hadn't taken any tests through the state yet. So we figured that would be the best place to start. We'll talk math first. Over here are our level ones. Those are your low scores. And this would be last year's and then the previous year and so on. Level twos, threes, and fours. So obviously we're going to try to get our level one to decrease, and we want our threes and fours to increase. We did have a little bit of an increase in level fours, which we're glad about. We're staying pretty level with twos. Our threes lacked a little bit. And again, this was for, comparing the years from back to back. I do think a little bit of it has to do with the computer-based testing, and I also think we have some work to do in math. We'll talk about that down the line. Here we compared, and the colors were a little closer on the big screen than they were on my computer, but here we compared our scores, Whitehall Elementary, to the rest of Washington County. And again, here's our level ones, our level twos, we're about the same place. We're lower level threes and lower level fours. Again, we want to get these level ones down. Fourth grade, same concept pretty much. We're still pretty even with the twos. We had quite a few more level fours than we did in the past, and our level threes were pretty comparative. So we're pretty happy with fourth grade. And then for fifth grade, again, we have a lot of level ones. And fifth grade, moving down to sixth grade, was our last grade level that did not have math modules from the time they started. So we're hoping that this year's fifth grade will have had them all the way through. So hopefully we can see an increase there. So what do we need to do to improve our math scores? We are curriculum mapping with a program called Rubicon Atlas, and that's helping us with our pacing. What we're finding is that we get bogged down trying to make sure that all the students had all the concepts. We wouldn't get to where we needed to be by June. So now we're trying to speed it up a little bit, see where we need to be. We're working hard on it. And again, we spent a lot of time last year talking about pacing, so hopefully this year we're in a little better shape. Our grade level meetings, which we meet weekly, we're focusing on the next gen math standards. We just went through those standards with the teachers last week, making sure we all understand what we need to be doing, where, when, and why. We've been talking with BOCES to help us come in and figure out really what is the issue, and they're going to help us with a math audit, go through our program. It'll be a lot of work, but it will help us narrow down to what our issues are. And then myself and Mrs. Gould are just doing walkthroughs through the math classes to see if we're doing what we need to do, and also all of my formal observations for those that do teach math will be in the math area. Obviously, if I go to art, I'm not going to expect to see math, but your grade level teachers, I've asked all those observations to set up in math, so hopefully we can figure out what we need to improve on. Okay, ELA, I can tell you this, that I feel very comfortable with what our reading program is. Our kids are learning to read, and they're doing a nice job. If you look here again, now we have our levels ones, twos, threes, and fours across the years. Not as big of a jump by any means. We're pretty consistent in our threes, and we're doing all right with our fours. So we're happy there. We certainly have work to do, but you can see that it's much more consistent. We're making growth is not fast when you're talking about a programmatical change. We use CKLA from K to 5, and it is a strong reading-based program. We did go through some of our data analysis, and I'll go through that in a second. But again, our level 1s are still higher than we like, but our 2s and 3s are a little bit more consistent, and we still want to get those scores.
Is the comparative data with the county, is that just the most recent year
of
data?
Yep.
Okay.
Last year's. And then, again, here's our level ones. And again, this is grade four. Level ones, twos, threes, we're right on track. And four, still need a little bit of improvement. What you're going to find after I finish this last slide, again, we're pretty consistent with our twos here. Our ones are still higher than we want. Our threes, we still want to get our fours up. And again, this was the same group that did not have CKLA, this fifth grade, did not have CKLA all the way through. So hopefully, again, fourth grade will help us next year. I can tell you that what we're doing in reading is strong. Our program is solid. In the spring, our AIMS-Web testing, which is we do three tests a year, we call them benchmark tests. We do them in the fall, the spring, in the winter. And it showed us that our third through fifth grade were reading at 95% of our kids reading at grades 3 through 5 were reading with less than 3 years. So we're reading well. What we are finding is that our CKLA program, after we went through the tests, isn't real strong in the writing part. And a certain amount of your scores come from what we call constructive response questions, and that's where they are expected to write essays and paragraphs and things along those lines. So what we've done is we are going to add to our CKLA for grades 3 through 5 keys to literacy in the content writing area, and that's where we fall down. We're seeing that we can read, we just can't write about it very well. So that's what we're going to work on this year. And then grades 1 through 3, literacy, early writing. And I know those two grades do overlap, but that's the way the program runs. So hopefully that will increase our ELA scores. We really are getting so we can read, we just need to figure out how to write about it. So in summary, we do feel like we have a real strong ELA program in the CKLA. Our RTI process is very effective in targeting specific interventions for students based upon our data. And again, we have those data meetings 3 times a year, and our kids are reading. And what those data meetings do is let us get them in the proper title reading groups and title math groups. And we have Tier 2 and Tier 3 intervention. And Tier 2 interventions are groups of students with up to 5, and our Tier 3 has a maximum of 3 students. So we're really focusing on those, you know, with high intensity. Again, I think the keys to literacy writing is going to help us and hopefully get those scores up. We're excited about getting BOCES in here to help with a math audit so we can figure out where our shortfalls are and what some of our programmatic issues are. I think you'll find that our teachers are very comfortable in the reading program and are still trying to find their way a little bit with the math module. It's kind of a different concept than what we thought of as kids, where you open your textbook and you do questions 1 through 30. And it's a whole different teaching concept, and it takes a little bit of focus on that. But that's this year's goal. And let's not forget about our science. There's a fourth grade state science test. And again, we have, again, grades for us is 2017 to 2018. 2017 is the blue, so our level ones went down, which is great. Our level twos stayed the same. Our level threes went down a little bit, but look at our level fours. And I think it's basically this shifted to there. So we're happy with our science, and I know with the addition of our science lab, that's only going to continue to improve. So what are we doing to help our science scores improve? Obviously, the science lab is going to be huge, and it's not a standalone process. Mrs. Barber is busy working with the grade level teachers, making sure that what she's doing in the lab lines up with what they're doing in the classroom. We had Mr. E2, and continue to have Mr. E2, working with our teachers. We worked 3 days over the summer. He came to one of our faculty meetings last month to talk about our next-gen science standards. With the addition of the science clubs, the book, and the science fairs, hopefully that will get the kids interested. They love going to the lab. They're excited every time they go down there. So I think our science scores will continue to improve. One of the things that we want to think about, too, as we compare our testing scores to other schools is, you know, you have a certain number of opt-outs, which sometimes is not in our favor. And we had 13 students this year in both ELA and math that opted out for grades 3, 4, and 5, which is a huge number compared to some schools. So I appreciate the fact that the teachers are working hard and trying to get our students to take those tests. Do you have any questions for me?
I have one.
Yeah.
The science test, does it include a writing component at all?
There's a written part, and then there's a lab part.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's not a multiple choice type thing.
Part of it is.
Mm-hmm. But they have
it's
to...
two different days.
They have to write like a paragraph. Content. Okay.
Not nearly to the
daunting task of the ELA, how much writing that involves.
Okay. Our level ones are the lowest ones, right?
Yes.
Those are the ones, how many, can we look into how many more of them can get alternative assessments? I mean,
well, alternative assessments, you're really talking about really low-level students.
They're not on
most,
that. Not
most
on
of
that.
Those kids wouldn't fall for that.
If they meet the criteria to do alternate assessment, then we would make that happen in special education at their meetings and stuff. And so we are looking at that. There are some kids in the past that haven't been tagged for alt assessment.
Right.
And so we've been improving that.
I know my son has one, and he didn't have one for years.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's like a very specific criteria. And so and some of our students definitely meet that criteria if they can, then we're certainly not putting them through that daunting task,
right.
And they can get their own assessment that meets their
needs. It stresses the kids out and makes the scores more.
Right. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it doesn't help anybody.
Rich, I saw that the reading, like, they had 95% with three errors. My assumption is that's just errors as they read.
Mm-hmm.
How do we assess comprehension as a fact component of reading? All
that's per grade level. Like, you find that, honestly, more as they get into the middle to upper grades. Certainly, you know, K-1 and 2, we're talking about letter recognition, sound recognition, things like that. And then we want to talk about, you start with your fluency, then you worry about your comprehension. Honestly, like towards the end of fourth grade and fifth grade, we start to get into the comprehension, and we're to that point where we're working on that now. Previous years, we were trying to make sure that we could read it first, even say the words right, but we're trying to get accuracy and fluency first, and then we can worry about the comprehension.
To be very fair, the 3-3 assessments are they're a poor representation of how our students actually perform, and that's not unique to Whitehall. Systematic statewide issue. 3-3 assessments have lost their level of concern that parents previously had, where they would prep their students, make sure their students were getting a good night's rest, have breakfast, the students were taking the assessments. At this point, people are frustrated with the state pushing these 3-3 assessments down their throats. Parents are opting children out. The parents that are opting their children out most typically are the middle-class parents that are doing a lot of reading. They're looking online at articles. They're listening to the news. And they're saying, you know what? I don't want my child to engage in these tests. Every child is 2% at each grade level. So that radically changes our overall scores and also doesn't give a very good snapshot of how an individual school is performing. We talked last year when we talked about data and really took a look at our Regents assessments as well as exit outcomes in the district to see how our students are doing. We're one of the top performers on Regents in Washington County. How can we be one of the top performers on Regents in Washington County when we're looking at 3-8 test scores that are some of the lower scores? It doesn't make sense. Something's not jiving there. Which again leads me to believe that it's very difficult to put a great deal of weight in the 3-8 assessments, particularly as when we're evaluating our students at the elementary level and the middle level with summative assessments that we offer here at school and formative assessments as we're evaluating our students. We're seeing that they're reading well, as Rich just shared. They're, you know, 95-98% of our students with 2 or 3 errors in reading. So it's, you know, looking at data in and of itself, just the, you know, the numerical performance of how our students are doing, it's a frustration for educators because it doesn't show the whole picture of how much work is actually being done and the progress that's actually occurring in the buildings. Do we have room for improvement? Absolutely. Are we continuously seek improvement? Absolutely. And I think some of the steps that are being taken, instituting the science lab, you know, working and getting ahead of the curve with the next gen standards, looking at the basically deconstructing our math program at the elementary level to see where our strengths and weaknesses are, and instituting the new writing program that we're looking at the elementary level to make a big difference. You know, systemic change is tough. You know, instituting the CKLA, the math modules, it's all new. And as we get into this a little bit further, a couple years in, you know, we're pretty confident we're going to see improvement. We're going to keep working at it.
You have good teachers out there that care and work their tails off.
Hey, Pat, to what degree, and I'll forget the data to look at it, does performance at grades 3 to 5 become a real good predictor on how students will perform, let's say, from grades 8 on 8 to 12?
We don't really have a whole lot of good connection between the two. We have students, when we look down here, at students that were minimal performers, perhaps, at the elementary level, they're still sitting for Regents exams and performing. We have students that don't as well. So I don't know that these 3 and 3/8 assessments are a good indicator. We also have students that will come down to the high school, junior, senior high school at 6th, 7th grade, still struggling. Some make up the gaps, others don't. Attendance, parental support at home, we've got a lot of issues that play in. With academic performance and trying to kind of call out what's actually causing these problems or what we're actually working on now with the RTI process that Rich spoke of, with the RTI process down here at Thimble Senior, Junior Senior High School as well. But a lot of work to be done.
Do we have a math textbook series for one through five?
At the elementary level, it's the math modules.
Okay.
The modules, which I guess, yes, you could liken it to a textbook. The problem that you run into with textbooks, particularly at the elementary school, is they're normed toward the big states,
mm-hmm.
Toward Florida, California, Texas, and they don't even hit the next-gen standards.
Okay.
The standards are required in New York State, so there's a great deal of supplementing that needs to happen. So moving to the modules at the elementary school makes the most sense.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
We'll add that to the building project.
That seat's a little crooked, so you may want to. I'm not sure if it was before I sat down.
I wanted to just comment briefly. I really enjoyed the new school newspaper that the journalism class has created. That was a really nice piece of work. So I don't know if anyone here is involved in that. In fact, I know at least, yes, I saw your article. So, yeah, very nice work with that. And kudos to Mrs. Short for putting that together. And
that's
a great way for them to apply that class.
Really pleased to see that.
Yeah. Anyone else have anything you want to raise? Mr. D.
Well, first and foremost, we need to start off by saying thank you to the Board of Education. This is Board of Education Appreciation Month, and with that, we're doubling all of your salaries this year.
Absolutely.
So we just keep increasing those board salaries every year. But seriously, on behalf of the school district and the community, thank you. It's a position that... It's thankless. Every decision that you make upsets 50% of the people. Thank you for doing what you do, being committed to the Whitehall Central Schools and its students. As a little gift this evening, Mrs. Mackey, our stellar cafeteria supervisor extraordinaire, has baked everyone a pie. So there's an apple pie over there for everyone as you depart today, as a little thank you gift for your hard work and all that you do for the district.
Very nice.
Couple of comments I'd like to share. Open houses were a great success at both the elementary and junior senior high school. Nice turnouts. Evenings weren't brutally hot as they've been in the past, which was kind of nice. But it's always good to see people coming through and getting a sense of what's happening within the buildings. Homecoming was great. Had an opportunity to judge the floats, and there were some nice floats this year. Very well done. I have to say, though, that rumor is that there was a payoff by the senior class to one of the judges.
I'm not going to say anything further, but I understand that there was a little malfeasance on the part of the senior class this year, but you know, we'll let that go. We'll get them later on that one. This upcoming Friday, all the school districts in Washington County, we're going to be working together on the countywide professional development day. We're going to be working as professional learning communities at grade levels as well as departments on the new standards. So not only are they going to be working together on that one individual day, they're going to be working together moving forward. Because as we create these PLCs, we're looking forward to having a little bit more collegiality between school districts. We all have the same issues and problems and challenges, and to open the door to communication with other school districts, with like-minded colleagues, we're looking forward to doing that work. Just a little happy note, I saw an interesting little grant out there, you know, mini grant, that was out about a month and a half ago. I wrote a little grant and picked up a cordless electronic handheld sprayer. Basically what it does is it aerosolizes cleaning solutions and cuts down on illnesses, flus, colds, pink eye, all that sort of stuff. They just hold on to it. It's a little contraption. They slap a little 18-volt battery in it and spray it on desks and chairs. $900 little piece of machinery, but we pick one up for nothing. So that'll be exciting. Tom's really excited about that. We'll see how that works out. If it's something that seems to work well, maybe it's something we'll pick up a couple additional in the future. We have a few congratulations that we certainly need to offer this evening. Our golf team has won for the fifth year in a row the league championship. We had two of our golfers qualify for sectionals, Matt Redman and Ethan Patch. Matt had an opportunity to participate in a state tournament, and they golfed through some tough weather, but you know, they performed extremely well. We're very, very proud of our students, and Matt was also named Golfer of the Year for our league, so that's pretty great news coming out of Whitehall. Our girls' soccer team is doing extremely well. They're playing this Wednesday here at home against Spa Catholic in a play-in match for sectionals, so that'll be pretty exciting. Football has also qualified for sectionals. They've got a crossover game this Friday night. At 7 o'clock, initially, we were supposed to play Warrensburg on Saturday here at home. However, the section has reassigned, and we're now playing Canajoharie in Canajoharie on Friday night. And on the 27th, we will have Hoosick Valley at Schuylerville. Cross Country has been able to compete as a full team for the first year. They're showing a great deal of success. They've actually performed well in a couple of the meets, so it's great to be working with Granville, and it's been good for our students. Our cheerleaders have had a great season. It's always great to watch, I don't know, 75, 80, 90. So it's great to see our cheerleaders out there. Again, I've been around the regional school districts here for a long time, and I was just dumbfounded when I first came to Whitehall. I'm like, oh my God, how did I even know we had that many uniforms? So pretty cool to see that many girls out there participating, and it seems like a real tight bunch. So thank you to our cheerleaders. And I believe that is all I have.
Sure, wasn't tonight.
I can go up one.
No, that's good.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. All right. We're down to agenda item number 8, which is our board and staff reports. Any comments, recommendations on this, Mr. D?
I would recommend the board take action to approve any treasurer's reports,
okay,
as well as bank reconciliation, bills, budget status reports, capital funds, revenue status reports, budget transfers, and extracurricular reports as submitted by our outstanding business manager, Mrs. Birch.
Yeah. We have a motion to approve those reports.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Brooks.
Second.
Second by Mr. Rock. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Items requiring board action.
I would recommend the board take action to approve the Board of Education minutes of 17 September.
We have a motion to approve those board minutes.
So
So moved.
Moved by Mrs. Norton.
Second.
Second by Mr. Dudley. Any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Building safety plan.
You have in your confidential materials copies of the elementary and junior senior high building safety plans with your approval. They do go in the offices in each of the buildings. And again, that's not for public consumption. It's how the district responds in the event of an emergency at either one of the buildings.
Okay. Do you have a motion to approve those two plans?
Mm-hmm.
Moved by Mr. LaChapelle.
Second.
Second by Mr. Brooks. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Corrected tax bills.
We had a couple of tax bills that were in error. One totaling $521.09, the other at $166.27. Mrs. Birch, anything you'd like to mention about either of those?
One was a property. They had the STAR exemption removed improperly. It was deemed a clerical error by the county. And a second property, a mobile home was removed from the property before the assessment roll came due, and that was an error on the assessor's part as well. So the county has recommended a corrected tax bill be issued for both the properties due to the errors.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve those two adjustments to the tax bills?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Rock.
Second.
Second by Mr. Dudley. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Cooperative bidding resolution.
As you're aware, school districts now have to test for lead on a regular basis. And with that said, we've been working not only with our water testing, but also any of our purchasing programs that we have in the district to cooperatively bid out any of the large purchases that districts are making, and in this case, working together with the surrounding school districts on a water sampling. And I would recommend the board approve our participation in that cooperative.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to approve that resolution?
So moved.
Moved by Mrs. Norton, second by Mr. LaChapelle. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Resignations, terminations.
I recommend the board to approve the resignations of Belinda Baker as a foreign language teacher and Tammy Casey as a second grade teacher, both for personal reasons.
Okay. Is that everyone okay if we read those together? Okay. Do we have a motion to approve those resignations? Moved by Mr. Brooks.
Second.
Mr. Rock, any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Approved. Special district meeting resolution.
As you heard this evening, we were discussing the proposed building project, and with that said, I would recommend to the board to approve the special district meeting resolution of the Whitehall Central School District being adopted October 15, 2018, calling for a special district meeting to authorize the expenditure of monies for school purposes and the levy of a tax thereafter.
Wonderful. Sorry, do you have a paper copy of the agenda by chance?
I do.
I seem to have lost my connection to the server. Thank you, sir. All right. Do we have a motion to approve those resolutions?
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Brooks.
Second.
Second by Mrs. Norton. Is there any discussion on those?
We're voting now on whether to go forward with the $16 million expenditure. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
The propositions are in
there. To bring it to the voters.
Okay.
And it is for both propositions. There's a included in it.
Right.
That's correct. Any other discussion on that? Okay. All those in favor of moving that forward?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Me. I'm opposed. Yep.
Okay. Carried. Next item up. Appointment rescind.
I would recommend the board take action to rescind the appointment of Ms. Stephanie Chekla. She was initially appointed to serve as the girls' JV soccer coach. We did not have a girls' JV soccer team this year. However, when we lost our JV team, we had several more students participate as modified soccer players. We had two girls' modified teams, and later I'll be asking the board to approve her retroactively for the second modified team.
Okay. We have a motion to approve those, that rescission, I should say.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Brooks.
Second.
Second by Mr. Dudley. Any discussion on that? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. I have my computer back. Great. Appointments.
I'd like to take these all.
There's a number. Is anyone opposed to doing this as a group? Everybody okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. I would recommend the board take action to approve Mrs. Sarah Siebold to the position of long-term substitute teacher for the second grade class, which is going to be open. We would have her in place for the remainder of the 18-19 school year. I'd also recommend the 26-week probationary appointment of Mrs. Heather Panuschek to the position food service worker. I would also recommend Ms. Gail Long to the position of substitute food service worker. Mr. Jeremy Martin to the position of substitute cleaner. Mr. Jared Brunell to the position of substitute bus aide and teacher aide. I'd recommend Mrs. Carrie Hurlbert to the position of substitute teacher aide, bus aide, as well as Mrs. Shayla Bakarian to the position of substitute teacher aide, bus aide. We also have a group of individuals for coaching positions. Mr. Darren Eggleston for winter training, Neil Molinaro for JV boys basketball, Darren Eggleston for JV girls basketball, Kevin Gibo for varsity assistant wrestling, Bob Deichel and Kevin Gibo for modified wrestling, Evie St. Clair for indoor track, Ray Lyman for bowling, and Stephanie Hayes-Chekla for modified girls soccer.
I got a question. That wrestling, Fort Ann used to pay that. Are they paying Kevin's salary?
They are going to pick up, yes, they are.
That's
still. I was going to go into a lengthy explanation. I decided not to because absolutely they are. They're still picking up the box.
I just wanted to check the mix.
Took my question.
Sorry about that.
Do we have a motion to approve those appointments?
So moved.
Second.
Second by Mr. LaChapelle. Any discussion on those? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Disposals.
I recommend the board take action to allow us to dispose of a pile of tech goods that are no longer of use to the school district and it has gone well beyond their useful life. We will be placing those items on Auctions International. If they're sold, we'll sell them. If they don't sell, we will discard them.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve those disposals?
So
moved. Moved by Mr. LaChapelle.
Second.
By Mr. Brooks. Any discussion?
Good luck with that.
So you're not going to bid?
No.
Okay. Any other discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Building use requests. Anyone have an issue if we do these together?
No.
Okay.
We have a series of building use requests. One from Val Wager to use the Junior High School pool and locker rooms for adult swim. One from Dina St. Clair to use the junior senior high school gym and locker rooms for the Elks hoop shoot. Amanda Heckman is asking to use the gym, pool, and cafeteria for Girl Scouts swim and pizza party. Pam Hobus is requesting to use the junior senior high school auditorium, lobby, sound booth, music classroom, and five middle school classrooms for her dance recital. Mrs. Birch is now working with Mrs. Hobus to determine a fee for that program. Mary Hollister is requesting to use the elementary cafeteria for Girl Scout parent meeting. Mr. Paul Culpo is requesting to use the high school gym on a series of dates for an AAU basketball tournament. And I'm also having discussions with Mrs. Petorti on how we can make Family Swim continue to work on Sundays.
We have a motion to approve those building usages.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Brooks.
Mr. Robin.
Second. Second by Mr. Brooks.
There you go.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Carried. Harassment and anti-discrimination policy.
I had shared with the board last week or the prior week that the state and federal government have moved forward a new harassment and anti-discrimination policy revolving most specifically around sexual harassment. The language has been provided to school districts throughout the state. I've provided that to you once approved, and we go through two additional reads at board meetings. We would begin training all of our faculty and staff in those new policies and procedures that are set forth.
Okay. I have a motion to approve those policies.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. LaChapelle.
Second. Yeah.
Second by Mr. Dudley. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. We're down to visitor items specific to our agenda tonight. If anyone has anything they'd like to ask or raise. Questions, concerns? Mr. Reynolds.
How's everybody doing?
Doing well.
I'm here on behalf of the WTA for Board Appreciation week, next week. We'd just like to say thank you for your for all you do for our school district and our community. And we'd like to present you with these cards.
Is this another Mediterranean cruise?
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Nice.
Thank you again for all you guys do for us and our community.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And can I leave this with you for Mrs. Waters?
Yes. Did someone in faculty make the cards?
Yes, Mrs. Reynolds.
Oh. She did a very nice job.
Thanks.
I thought that might have been the answer before I asked it, but I had to ask.
I'm not that crap.
Very nice.
Voice with paper, right?
Anyone else have anything they want to raise?
If I could just ask if we could take your yearbook photo at the next board meeting.
Absolutely.
I don't understand why that is. If the yearbook could take the board event's group picture at next month's meeting.
Sure.
Great, thank you.
Absolutely, thank you. All right. I guess I'll ask for a motion to adjourn the meeting.
So moved.
Moved by Mr. Brooks.
Second.
Moved by Mr. Rock. I got you right this time.
You did.
Any discussion on adjournment? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting adjourned. Don't forget your apple pie.